Greetings and welcome to Prepare to Fast Forward, our chance to leave the past behind and discuss what we have been consuming from the modern day. Joining me is the ever tangible, my writing on these notes is terrible, tangentable, I think is what I meant to put down there, Chris. So, yeah.
Tangible. Oh, is that actually a word? Because it should be.
It is now because I've just made it up.
Because that sounds great.
It's a new word that I've just created and it's just for you. So you're welcome.
Copyright Jason Bajan.
Absolutely. And also joining us is first-time visitor to the podcast, the host of Bite High No Limit, is the one and only Carlos.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jason. And hello to you, Chris, as well.
Hello.
Now, you know, we've had obviously a bit of technical difficulties trying to get this one recorded. And currently we're using Carlos's Zoom account to record this episode. So thanks mate for lending us your Zoom account and recording capabilities because Zencaster did not like your computer. So yeah, thanks man.
That's fine. I think I'm partly responsible, so I ought to pay it back in some way. Well, we'll see how we go, and then if it's any good, we might let Zoom Corp sponsor your podcast for a couple of quid.
You know, I'll take where I can get, mate. So yeah, definitely. Okay, so obviously, Carl, I'm going to call you Carlos, Carlo, Carl throughout this whole podcast. So you know, just bear with me.
Well, yeah, no, Carl or Carlos is fine. Basically, yeah. I use Carlos because my family call me Carlos, and not Carl. And also, when I'm at work, if I say Carl on the phone, they think it's COL or they think it's short for Colin. So I just say Carlos.
Okay, fair enough.
That's fair.
Yeah, mate, anything to like stop misunderstandings or just make your life easier. It's just, yeah, whatever you need to do in it. So
that's why I don't speak to people, Jason.
Only me.
Only you guys and my wife. That's about it.
At the top, I said that you're the host of the Bite High No Limit podcast. And if anyone's listening that doesn't know what that is, Carlos, then please enlighten them.
Well, where do you start with a podcast like Bite High No Limit? It's not. I'm not a comedian. I can't really do like super duper game video playthroughs or anything like that. But what I can do is talk for Great Britain sometimes. And the idea of the podcast is to just look at people's relationships with technology, and that is the only jumping off point. So like you can have episodes from like phone freaking over to the Max Headroom incident. You can have architecture even of old arcades. And you know, most recently, I've been lucky enough to get an interview with a ZX Spectrum game programmer, Bob Pape, which has been really good. But yeah, it's just basically it's like an arena podcast. It's sort of like you know, documenting people's experiences with technology. I'm a big fan of teletext, as you know, and anybody who's a big fan of What's Wrong with Wolfie would know that you know that our paths have crossed before, and I've chanted long enough about that subject. But basically, yeah, it's basically a broad spectrum of subjects. With a weak tenure slink of technology.
One of the things I really like about your podcast, you never really know what you're going to get next.
My poor listeners, they won't know either. they'll be ready for something, and they're in for some treats.
there was one episode that you did do a few months ago, and it was only like a 10-minute episode, and it was, you know, you were having this conversation with this lady, and then at the end it turned out to be like an AI person. That one got me, man. Must say, you tripped me on that one.
Oh wow! Well, that's good to know. It was basically, it was an AI episode. I won't be spoiling anything for anyone, but it was quite strange because the people that were sort of listening to it fed back and they said, "Were you not well that day? Because you sounded it didn't sound like you're in a flow and you were umming and ahhing." And I thought, well, yeah, that's right. I followed the script word for word from ChatGPT. So did my excellent guest Leela Johnson. She followed that word for word as well, and it was harder than you think to put ums and ers in. You know, you do it quite naturally, obviously, but when you've actually got to put them into a script. That ChatGPT just brought up, it was an interesting experience, and What I didn't include in the episode, funnily enough, was that I redid the script 2 months later, because obviously, you know, when you ask for people's time to help with doing these things, you know, they can't do it instantly. And there was a bit of a hiatus between submitting the script to Leda and her coming back with the recording. I actually ran it through again through ChatGPT. And do you know what? The second script got a lot better. You know, and it was it over the course of a month or so since I first typed that search term in, the machine learning had obviously improved. You know, it was still very nondescript. I mean, there was nothing really in there. There was any facts. It was just a massive word salad. But there you go. That some people would say that's me normally.
I may be averse to AI, but it fascinates the hell out of me. To see what they're pushing out now, like you see on Twitter, these things that have been pushed out, like these tracking shots in a city with an alien walking through it. Mate, it's scary stuff and fascinating stuff. The fact that if you're not paying attention enough, you would think that a real person had written that script.
Well, that's a good point, Chris. I mean, when I've spoke to other people who use AI who get really good results out of it, the amount of work they're actually having to do for plugins and things like that for it to produce the results. I mean, I'll have a little tap on an AI sort of like online generator thing for nothing, and the results are quite crap. But you know, there's still a lot, awful lot of prep work and foundation work that's done around sort of decent AI. Mm-hmm.
That's, I always remember my IT teacher at school saying, computers are stupid. You have to tell them what to do to get your result. Like any tool, AI is fundamentally the same. If you're doing an image generation or a script generation, you need to have a gallery or a database of material for it to work from. So in a way, there is a human element to the AI. The AI is the stitching material, whereas the human-made elements are the images, the videos, the text, the grammar, all those kind of little bits, and then the AI just stitches it together as best as it can with the prompts that you give it. It fascinates the hell out of me. I just wish I had time to play around with it.
It is it's a great technology, and I think your teacher was right. So I think the term is GIGO, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, that's...
And, that's absolutely right. It's certainly a technology that's going to get a lot easier and probably a little bit more ubiquitous, but... We'll figure out what to do with it. When the ZX81 came out, the myth was that you could run a nuclear power station with it, but quite luckily we don't. So
and you mentioned just a minute ago there, Carl, about your last guest you had on the last episode about the R-Type developer. They were really cool, fascinating episodes as well. Was there anything that you got out of that episode that you wasn't expecting?
An awful lot, really. I mean, I'd read Bob Pape's book, which is available online. He wrote a book and released it for nothing. It's a free download as a PDF, and I've read it many times. And when I touched base with Bob online, he said, "Well, are you sure anyone's going to be interested for a start?" And I said, "Well, you know, try me. We'll just have a chat about it. I'm interested in it." And we covered, because what I didn't want to do is just go, "Oh yeah, tell me about your book," and he'll go, "Well, just bloody read it," you know, he would say. And so we spoke about the book, we spoke about all other manner of things. We went from Matchbox and Corgi cars over to Dinky cars, Wembley footballs, Dragon 32s. We went across absolutely everything, and films. He's a very passionate movie buff, and he produced a different publication as well, because when we were talking about, you know, have you done anything else, he said, "Oh yeah, I did a publication called Deadlights," and Deadlights was something that he did over for a local comic shop in Swansea. It was a one sheet review of some films that he liked, and they weren't, you know, they were just his basic, films, not even necessarily his favourites, but ones that he felt that he could write about. And he would have a sheet of A4, like a flyer, and they would randomly just go in people's comic books when they bought the, you know, whatever they did from the shop. And we spoke about that because he uploaded all of them to archive.org. So they're available. If you type in like Bob Pape's Deadlights and archive.org, you'll get his... you know, his finished product of all of them, and some very fascinating films. He's got a massive DVD collection, and a very humble man as well. You know, he's very realistic, but a big realist. You know, he doesn't sort of like go around going, oh, I'm a, you know, ZX Spectrum programmer and all that. He said it was a job. You know, it was a terrible job, low paid. And but he said, you know, he said that he had his moment in the sun with it, and you know, he'd never regret it. And and you know, and he's not. So, and I've had a lot of really good feedback about it, Jason. It's been it's been really nice. And I can't stand the sound of my own voice, which is probably probably quite amazing. But you know, I've listened back to it a couple of times in the car, and that's probably a sign when you know you've done something right, when you can tolerate yourself and still re-enjoy the guest that you had on. So but yeah, no, two parts to that. And download all your What's Wrong with Wolfies and all them, and then when, if you've got a bit of space left in your phone, you know, download a couple of mine.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely highly recommended. If people did want to do that, how can they find it?
Well, they can either bang it into the search engine like Bite High No Limit podcast, or you can get it at now this is interesting, the podcast URL of this is sunspotstories.podbean.com. That would take you to like the main site where they are. Yeah, but you can listen on Apple, Google, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Listen Notes, and Podchaser. And also it's on YouTube, which is bloody rubbish.
And Good Pods.
And Good Pod, yes, and Good Pods. Yes, exactly. Yes. So it's basically everywhere. It's aggregate quite well. And if you struggle with that, you can always at me on X at TeletextR.
Okay, before we get into what we want to talk about, I just want to bring up coffee quickly. It's my first opportunity to really talk about this quickly before we get into the main part of the show. My plan was we'll produce a bonus podcast for people who supported us on Ko-fi. And I tested this out a few months ago, and Ko-fi is not like Patreon. Like it doesn't let you upload audio files directly to its servers. You have to like upload it to a supported hosting site, and one of those was SoundCloud, which was the best one I could use. And it all seemed to be fine. It seemed to work. It was just cool. So fast forward a few months later, we'd recorded our first episode. I went to upload it, and they've obviously, in the meantime, I don't know, maybe it was longer than a few months ago, I don't know. But, you know, in the meantime, they've obviously added the subscription service, which means that now the free one only lets you upload 3 hours of audio. And if you want to upload more, you have to delete old audio to then put new audio up, which ain't going to work. And for unlimited uploading, of course, you have to pay the £15 a month, whatever it is, for their subscription. Yeah, so I was like, great. So I spent a very long time trying to scour the internet to see if I could find an alternative. I mean, there are alternatives out there, but they're all locked behind a subscription service. Literally every single one I found that would offer me a private RSS to distribute the podcast were all locked behind a subscription service. I was like, great, I can't afford another subscription service on top of everything else. So I had to go back to Patreon, because Patreon apparently seems to be, as far as I can find, the only service that will offer you a free private RSS. I mean, free is in air quotes, because obviously for any donation or payment that people pay to you, they take a service charge out anyway. So it seemed to be the most viable option. So that's where we are. We've kept the Ko-fi page open in case people just want to chuck us a quid one time only. But then we do have the Patreon where we've got a couple of tiers, and that's where I'll be uploading the monthly podcast. That's done. It's up there right now. And if you want to go and check it out, I've also posted a taster episode onto the main feed, so you can hear 15 minutes of the podcast. And then if you want to hear the rest of it, you can jump over to Patreon, and there's a 7-day free trial on the tier that podcast is on. So you can check out the rest of the podcast and the other benefits that tier brings. But yeah, didn't want to use Patreon. I don't, you know, it's a bit more expensive with their fees than Ko-fi. I really like Ko-fi because they only, they don't really charge you a lot of platform fees, but it is what it is. If this is what we want to do, then that's where we've got to be. So yeah, I hope you go and check it out. It was a fun time. Me and Chris sat down and we went through some of our favorite film scores from the 90s. And it was, yeah, it was a really nice little chat. And it was really fun putting it together as well, putting all the audio clips in and stuff. And yeah, had a nice time. I ended up spending a lot of time just listening to the music. Okay, well, that's my Patreon ramble out of the way and how we've ended up there and not on coffee where I wanted to be, really. There we go. Okay, well, all that out of the way. I hope you're all sitting comfortably as we prepare to fast forward. Carl.
Hello.
What you've been watching, mate? Come on, tell us.
One thing that I'm really enjoying at the moment, which is on Disney Plus, is Shogun. Really into that. And it's based on, I think, a Robert Clavell novel. And I remember something from when I was very, very young on ITV all the time called Shogun. And I thought, oh, maybe this is the you know, the remake of this. And so it was, because, you know, the original Shogun, when I was a kid, it was just boring. It just went on for hours and hours. And I didn't pay any attention to it at all. Although I do remember having on my ZX Spectrum a game called Taipan always being advertised on the back. And that had samurai swords and all that on the back. And I associated the two. And funny enough, when you look back, that was a Robert Clavell novel as well. So, yeah, there's your serendipity there. So that's... thought, oh, I'll watch this now. I'm old enough to watch this. It's blown my socks off. It really has. I'm on episode 4, and I shan't explain too much about the plot because, you know, it's unfortunately in this day and age, I can find out what's going to happen in the next episode because my phone's clever enough to know that I like Shogun and it thinks I'm interested. But I've turned everything off to do with it, so I can't even give you any factoids about the show because if I was looking it up, I might find something out. So I've self-imposed blackout, but basically it's based in Japan, I think in the 17th, 18th century. And it's in the Portuguese sphere of influence and the Spanish. There's a bit of a carve up between the Portuguese and the Spanish and the spice route. They've kept it secret from the British. So our British guy turns up. Yeah, he gets stuck there. Many adventures unravel from there, really. But my first impressions of it are there's a lot of Japanese dialogue in it, a lot of subtitles, very subtitle heavy, which is brilliant because it keeps it quite authentic, you know. And it's been very well received in Japan as well, which the original, well, when I say the original, the 1970s, 1980s version was not so well received in Japan, was probably, you know, a little bit, you know, probably missed their culture by a country mile. But not being Japanese myself, I couldn't really attest to that. But yeah, it's just really good. And it's one of them ones where I'm hoping there's a second series, but I don't think they can, like, you know, revive the author to produce anymore. But it's an absolutely brilliant world to be in. It achieved 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and they actually had to limit it down to 99%.
Wow!
Because the internet would break.
wasn't it Richard Chamberlain was in the original Shogun?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So that's
I've got, like you, yeah. I have vague memories of, like, my mum watching it on a Sunday.
Yeah. It was sort of like, it was a depressing time because it was like time for bed. I guess Howard's Way was on the other side. but yeah, it was like, get your pyjamas on.
I only really learned about Shogun a few days ago, to be honest, because Rob in our Discord popped up and said he'd been watching it as well. I was like, Shogun, I mean, what's that about? Kind of rings a bell. I can't really remember the old one too much. Yeah, I jumped on and watched the trailer, and I was like, my God, why have I not known about this before? It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. Like the production value seems like, I don't know, like they seem to have had a lot of money to throw at it because it looks amazing. And I'm quite a sucker for the Japanese history and the Japanese culture. I mean, it's quite intriguing, isn't it? Because it's still quite foreign to us. It's quite a thing to say in this day and age of, like, us all being kind of connected these days, and faraway lands are not as exciting as they used to be because, you know, how connected we are now. You know, I was saying this to the wife the other day, like, you know, like, I always used to find America really fascinating because I didn't really know much about it. All I knew about America was what I saw in the films. But still to this day, the Japanese culture and the history still seems quite foreign to me anyway. So something like Shogun was like, my God, I really need to sit down and watch this. Not being managed to do that just yet. Yeah, no, I really liked what I saw of it and the action and the plot itself, and I'm really intrigued to hopefully get down, sit down and watch it.
Yeah, I'll definitely recommend it, mate. It's there's the yeah, there's, you're right about the culture. I mean, I didn't realize, this is based on, factual things that have happened. It's not a true story, don't not gonna say anything like that, but it's based on historical events, and I never quite realized how Western religion had like influenced the Japanese culture that much that early. The Catholic the church had quite an influence in some of the Japanese islands. You think of the samurai and things, and you think of Buddhism and all that, but yeah, the two religions sort of like got on quite well. And there's a big plot point, obviously, with the disagreements that the two different flavors of Christianity have. It plays a major part in the story as well. But yeah, it is amazing, and there's a lot of humor in it. A lot of dry humor, and the Japanese people come across as a very strong stoic race, probably more of a stiff upper lip than the British, dare I say it.
Oh, I didn't know that was possible.
Well, yes, but yep, your miles may vary. You might be the 1% of Rotten Tomatoes that didn't like it.
Well, I showed the trailer to my good wife, and she was like, "Nah, not for me, that one."
Now
I get the same reaction every time.
you're watching that when she's at the darts, aren't you?
Yeah, something like that, mate. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, Shogun is a great pick, dude. And yeah, everyone should go and at least give it a try. So that's on Disney Plus, you say?
Yes, yeah, D plus for that one. I don't know what offers there are on D plus at the moment, but yeah, watching that, and it's a bit of a saving grace. You're about to hit the cancel button, then they put out a pearler like that. They know what they're doing.
You said you've been watching something old recently. What has that been?
It was one of them odd rabbit hole moments. I think I was listening to another podcast from quite a podcast listener, and I think the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon came up.
Oh,
Oh, no
No.
way.
Wow.
Yeah. And this guest of this podcast was, I think it was a podcast called Looks Unfamiliar. And the guest on there, she was talking about the fan fiction that surrounds Dungeons and Dragons, because I wasn't aware of it, but I used to watch that cartoon when that was on Saturday morning television, I think. I think it used to be, and it's like, here's the new Dungeons and Dragons ride, and all that. And I used to love it, and I was quite infatuated with a girl in it, to be fair, being quite young. But I never realized, because when you watch the cartoons, you in those days, if the BBC decided not to show them, you just didn't show them. They didn't show them to the end and go, oh, that was the last in the present series or anything like that. That was it, And I never realized it. There was actually a final episode, but it was never made. So, and I think it was to do with the producers of the cartoon in America. They said no, it was too violent or something like that, so they decided not to do it. But it was actually made by the fans. And this is old news. But I've only just discovered it, and it's on YouTube if you want to watch it. So
Wow.
the final one, it's based on a script that was actually made, and they used a lot of stock footage. A lot of dialogue, and some fans have voiced up some dialogue. Some animators come out of retirement to help with the direction of it. And I watched the final ever Dungeons and Dragons, and that's on YouTube. And I enjoyed it. It was good fun. And it's got quite a twist to it. Yeah, it's just really good, and it's probably ended better than things that you pay a fortune for a month to watch. I think it finished here better than Game of Thrones.
Oh, God.
Can't comment about Game of Thrones. I never watched it.
Ah, well, it's you are the 1%, you see.
1%. That's fascinating on the Dungeons and Dragons, though. That's really cool. I love it when a bunch of fans just come together and just like have the passion to do something like that. It's amazing. Was that the only one you watched then? Was that, or did you then go down and start watching all the other old episodes?
No, that was the only one I watched because I ran out of time. When I saw that, it sort of brought back all the other ones to me, and because they were reusing some of the footage, you sort of remembered some of them as well. But it got me thinking about all sorts of cartoons, really. You know, like the forgotten cartoons, you know, Roo Dog and the Dweebs. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, God. Yeah. I have not seen that in years. Me and my brother used to watch that. And my brother, I sent him, years ago, is a video that was on Facebook. And he said, I have no memory of this. And I said, what do you mean? We used to watch it on Saturday mornings. It was on with Sharky and George and Doug and all that. Oh, mate, I have not heard that word uttered in years.
And all the dogs are badly drawn, except for Roo Dog himself, I think. That's the...
film yesterday, and it's a new film that's on Amazon Prime with Zac Efron and what's the wrestler's name, John Cena.
Was he a real Cena station?
I tell you, right, the film's called Ricky to Nicky, right, and I'll get onto John Cena in a minute and his role in this film. But the basic premise of the film is that there's these three guys, and they've grown up together from young kids up until adults. What happens obviously right at the beginning of the film is that they are like 10 and they're out trick-or-treating, and then they play a prank on this house that, you know, I think they leave a shit bomb outside the door and then like set it on fire. This backfires, the fire spreads everywhere. They panic, you know, because the house is on fire now. So they leave a piece of clothing behind and they write Ricky Sinicky on it. And ever since then, as they've grown up in life, they've always used Ricky Sinicky as an excuse to get out of things and go away on a lad's holiday. That's the basic premise of the film. It's directed by Peter Farrelly. That surname might be familiar to some people listening. One half of the Farrelly brothers. And we all should know the Farrelly brothers from the 90s, really, because they were quite well known for making films that were quite out there. Is that fair?
Yeah.
A fed way of saying it, I guess. And this film just reeks of that. It felt like going back to the 90s and watching some kind of, like, I don't really know what you can class it as, really, but it's just full of like knob gags and like really like some rude jokes and weird out there kind of jokes as well, just to try and make you laugh or whatever. And some hit and some miss. Basically, these guys use Ricky Sinicky and they go away on a lad's holiday, but it gets cut short because one of the guys' wives has their baby. So they get back and they start questioning, is Ricky Sinicky actually a real person? So they hire this guy, who is John Cena, to come along and be Ricky Sinicky. And John Cena's character is... it's interesting because he's like an alcoholic. He's not doing anything and he's like a failed actor and stuff. And he's doing this show. He's just doing lots of impersonations of different singers from throughout the time, but he's parodying them. So they're all like about knobs. It's the Farrelly brothers. That's what you should be expecting. And he dresses up as well as that character that he's singing. So, you know, he dressed up as Boy George. And then he dressed up at Britney Spears, lots of different other old school singers. It's a film that, you know, if you want to burn an hour and a half of like brainless, you know, jibber jabber, then that's the kind of film that you want. But I did enjoy it, actually. I wasn't sure. Like I said, some things didn't hit, but some things did. And there's like a nice kind of heartwarming message at the end of it all, really. So that was quite nice. Oh, and it's got William H. Macy in it as well.
Oh, nice. That sounds batshit crazy. I need to add this to my list. What was it called?
Ricky Spinicky, I think it's called. I mean, my good wife suggested to watch it, and I didn't really know what I was getting into, really. I quite like the basic premise of the film. So, yeah, I was like, wow. I just didn't know we made films like this still. So it was quite a nice surprise. And, yeah, you should go and check it out.
So I was about to ask you, you know, is it the sort of film that if someone else walks into the room, you'd pause it because it'd be sort of like, it'd be silly. But you've already said that you were with the boss watching it. So,
oh, not my boss.
No,
not my boss. My God, no. Well,
yeah,
you know, well, I was with my wife, so I'm yeah, kind of boss, I suppose. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that's it. So, you know, so yeah, if there's someone else in the room and you're watching it, then it can't be that silly. I find that, you know, if you're watching something and you feel a bit uncomfortable when someone else walks in, you think, well, this must be silly. But yeah, no, there must be. I think the sort of films that you're talking about, you know, was it like Something About Mary and Dude Where's My Car and films like that? They were they were of their time, weren't they? But they must still be being made. You know, that might have been a film that was never bought at the time, and you know, someone won it in a poker game.
That sounds brilliant idea.
Yeah, I've got to make it. I've won it in a poker game. I've got to make it.
So, like doing it on a dare. I dare you to make this.
I guess that's the abyss with Netflix, though, isn't it? You do get really good stuff, but you get a lot of bloatware as well. You know, you get this stuff like I watched something called like Fool Me Once or something like that, and it looks good. And my God, it was like eight episodes of shite, and you know, and it was like. You know, they could have had one episodes 1, 2, and 8, I think, and that would have been perfect. But they bloated it out, you know, and I think they have to do it. I think there's a pile of money there, and you know, they do commission some films that maybe were, you know, from the 90s or the early 2000s, and they go, we can make it now. There's funding.
Yeah, maybe for Peter Farrelly. Had this idea back in the 90s and nobody wanted to make it back then. Mm. So, and like you say, Amazon had a bit of money. Mm. Okay, dude, let's have a crack at it and see what happens.
Yeah.
But like you, Carl, I also want to bring up an old program that I've been watching recently. I have to thank Ben Baker for this. And I believe one of your past guests, Ricardo Orban, isn't it? Wasn't he
That's
on your
right.
podcast?
Yeah.
Those two guys have come together and they've made a podcast on ALF, the old 80s sitcom about the alien that lives with the nice suburban family. And ALF is a program that I've, you know, thought about every now and again over the years, but I've never really gone back and revisited it ever. I don't think, you know, it's one of those programs where you're like, oh yeah, I remember watching that when I was a kid. And then that was it, really. But yeah, these two guys have come together and they've created a podcast called Alfsplaining. And they're going through it episode by episode. And I thought, do you know what? This is a good opportunity to go back and start watching them again. Apparently, they're all on YouTube because what isn't these days? Yeah, I thought, do you know what? Yeah, great chance. I'll go back and I'll watch one a week and then I'll check out the guys' podcast at the same time. So that's what I've done. I've watched the first four episodes of ALF. I can't remember any of it at all. I kind of remember what it's about. I kind of remember what ALF looked like, but that was about it, really. I couldn't remember what ALF sounded like. I couldn't really remember how ALF behaved or how ALF was in the program, and I couldn't really remember a lot about the family itself either. So it's actually been a real pleasure to go back and watch ALF. And I think it's a program that's kind of been forgotten over the years as we've gone on. a lot of programs have stayed in the zeitgeist to people. I think Alpha's kind of fallen out of that a little bit. So yeah, it's been a blast. And after the first episode, I was like, yeah, I really like Alf. He's a really quality dude. He's like firing, you know, joke after joke after joke. He seems to like be very comfortable in this new planet. He's like a duck taken to water all of a sudden, you know, he's landed. And by episode two, you know, he's comfortable on the couch watching telly, you know. And I think was the funny other side of it now, you know, because TV is made so differently these days to the 80s. And like we in today's telly, we need continuity. We need connections to everything.
I bet there's some American podcasters kicking themselves that Ricardo and Ben have come up with a brilliant idea for a podcast, because a watch through on that is, yeah, it is good. And everything you were saying, Jason, about the, you know, there's no stories, there's no backstories or anything on it. You know, it's just basically, I mean, the guy's name isn't even Alf. And like they've decided to call him Alf, and it's stuck. He's gone, yeah, I'm quite happy with that. It's sort of like, what was his name? Was it Gwythorn or something? Or
I can't remember. It's something like Larry or something, wasn't it? Or
I can't remember now. They haven't done their jobs very well because we can't remember their names. But
doesn't Alf stand for alien life form?
It does indeed. Yes. Yeah.
Now I haven't watched Alf. I maybe have seen a few episodes as a kid at early mornings on a Saturday or a Sunday in the 90s. That's as far as my knowledge goes.
Yeah. Well, that was the beauty of regional television, you see, because I think Anglia used to show it sort of like at 11:30 before the wrestling, just after Motormouth or whatever was on, and just before the wrestling. And then like other people, you know, you sort of, when I stayed down with my cousin in London, they wouldn't have it on till like, you know, the afternoon or something like that. You know, it was when they decided they could show things when they liked. But it was Alf was similar to me. You know, I could take it or leave it. It was, you know, it was just one of them things. But it's fascinating now just to hear two people talk about it and talk about it in ways that are sort of like interesting. They you know, those guys got really good chemistry. They could, you know, and I don't know how many episodes of Alf there were. I think Ricardo said that he bought the German box set. So I'm wondering if he's watching, like, you know, I guess he's watching it in German. That's what he's doing. But, you just don't want to be a cat. You think he eats cats, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the episodes I watched only today, actually, was about the family had left Alf to his own devices. They all had to go out for some reason. Then they come back. The house is trashed. He's had a great time. He's eaten all the food. Literally, the house is a complete and utter mess. Couches are upside down. Curtains have been pulled down. And nobody can find the cat. So they all fit, you know, and by now they know that people on his home planet, Melmac, I think it's called, they're quite partial to eating cats. So they all go looking for Lucky. They can't find him. So they all blame Alf. They all say, "You've eaten our cat, haven't you?"
And he says, neither confirm or deny that statement.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, he coughs up a furball as they're all blaming him for eating their family cat. But, you know, it all turns out that he hasn't eaten the cat. And, you know, because Alf went out and tried to find him and then thought that he found him, only to find out that it wasn't him. It was a different cat. And now they've got two cats. It's a much better episode than I've just described it. But, you know, it's funny. I think I've just forgotten how Alf is and just know how quick he is with his jokes and everything else.
He sent a lot of zingers, didn't he? He was a zinger merchant. Yeah.
You know, and the families, you know, the literal, like, suburban sitcom family. Mm. Husband, wife, boy, girl, you know, and thing. But it is Alf himself that just brings it out to this level. And, like, even on the podcast, the guys were saying, like, this episode got, like, 23 million viewers back in the day. And I was like, that's amazing for a sitcom. Mm. You know, I didn't realise. I mean, I knew it was popular, but I didn't realise it was that popular.
And all the sitcom tropes that they pick up on, is it like sofa in the middle of the room? I mean, I don't know who's got a sofa in the middle of their room, but they all have in their sitcoms. And you got the husband with the, you know, who's punched well above his weight with the wife. You know, the wife is always like really attractive and quite, you know, quite milfy, isn't she? And
Yeah.
it's
Good old Willie, you know.
yeah, that's it. And he's a
I don't...
radio ham, and there's a telescope in every room.
Yeah.
What's that about? It's sort of like he's obviously perving on people, but you know, that's yeah,
Yeah.
he's a peeping Tom.
Oh, God.
Hey, back to future
Yeah.
reference.
Indeed, that's it.
Yeah, no, and it's been really nice to go back and watch an 80s TV show. It's not something I've done in a long time. So it's just been a real pleasure just to go back and watch Alf and just rediscover it. I'm just really looking forward to watching more of them. So, yeah, big shout out to Alf Splaining and just going back and watching Alf. It's all on YouTube. Go and watch it. Go and give it a couple of watches. Like, the 21 minutes long, because, you know, this was an American show in the 80s. And like in the 80s and 90s, like, American TV was all about the ads. Because I do remember a friend that I made in America sent me over a VHS of stuff he taped off the telly. And I sat down and watched this VHS, and I was like, Jesus Christ, they love their adverts.
They used to have adverts after the credits and things like that. And in fact, you know, going back to when you watch it and you see it go dark and then get light again, you know that was like an insert for an ad in another territory.
They do, you know, for like Alf, they do the opening, then they'll do the titles, and then they'll cut to an advert and they'll come back. And
Incredible.
that always felt, made me like go, wow, I can't believe they actually do that. I mean, I thought we were bad with just having one advert break between a half hour show, but they cut adverts there, and then they'll cut adverts in the beginning, and then at the end they'll cut into adverts again and then come back.
Free television now, isn't it? It's non-subscription television. I guess that's what pays
Well,
for it, but
yeah. You
yeah,
know,
that's
and
it.
you kind of see that going back and watching Alf. You don't get the adverts, thankfully. But you know, what would be a half hour show is only actually 21 minutes long, so
Do you
it's
still get the
quite.
end credits that go faster than the speed of light? I mean, I always remember that at the end of
Yeah.
Charles in Charge. Just go straight past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be gutted if your name was on that, wouldn't you? Look,
You
mum,
would
mum,
be
you're going to
like,
see my name in a minute. You're going to see my name in a minute. Oh, there it
yeah. My
went.
magnum opus. I was the sound operator on that, the third deputy sound operator. And it's sort of like, you have to pause it. Like,
And then you go, well, oh, hang on. I tell you what, I recorded it. Let me
yeah.
rewind it and fast forward, and then I'll pause it when my name comes up, and then I'll pause it, and then because it's VHS, like you just get all the you get all the lines and the zigzagging,
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
so you wouldn't be able to see it anyway.
No, that's it. Just take my word for it. So that's a
Yeah,
thing now
you
on there.
need to
That's
adjust
it.
that tracking.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, please go on. Please go on.
You got to watch it. The podcast drops every Monday, I believe.
It does.
And yeah, so you can watch it on YouTube and then you know, and listen to the running commentary from the Alf dugout on the podcast.
And I need to send a bill to them for all this promotion that we're doing for their
Well, it was
podcast.
spreading the love,
Yeah,
some
exactly.
of these podcasts need help along, Jason. You know, it's they're a tiny podcast. I think they're only at number 7 in the eye charts for TV programs. The bastards.
Never mind.
I was 186 in Finland the other week.
There you go.
Personal blogs.
We've been 88 in Russia before, so you know.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful stuff.
Two things that we've been watching at the moment. Well, one thing we've watched together, but has anyone watched this mad comedy with Alan Tudyk called Resident Alien?
Now, you sent me a message earlier saying I might pick this one. I was like, what is that? Because I hadn't really heard about it before. But I watched the trailer and I was like, this looks great.
It is fabulous. Now, if anyone's not familiar with Alan Tudyk, Firefly, just watch Firefly and get back to me. Firefly is one of my biggest passions in life, and it has been for what, 22 years now? That lovely show that got cancelled after 13 episodes. But he is also Disney's good luck charm. He has voiced King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph, the chicken in Moana.
Can't forget the chicken.
He is a very, and he was in A Knight's Tale. He played the one of the guy, the red-headed guy in A Knight's Tale, if anyone's familiar with that film, amongst loads of other things. But this show is basically an alien that lands on Earth to exterminate humankind, accidentally ends up having to take the form of the person he killed, and then there's this shenanigans going on where he poses as the guy that he killed. So you have a literal fish out of water story with this alien whose ship is broken into small bits and scattered around Colorado, and he's got to try and find it. It's just a Rube Goldberg machine of silly shenanigans, and it does not take itself seriously at all. What the vibe they have obviously gone for is, do you remember in the late 90s when you had this lovely influx of silly sci-fi that you could just watch and it wasn't too taxing on your brains or your time? It is a very wholesome character and family-driven show. And again, it was marketed as this screwball comedy, but in actual fact is more of a drama with comic relief all the way through it. Alan Tudyk is a very, very gifted physical comedian, as well as an award-winning theatre and television and film actor. It's very positive representation. It has LGBTQ representation. It has a very, very positive and very, very heavy Native American representation as well. In fact, half the cast are Native American or Native American descendants because it's in Colorado. And if you're going to set a show in Colorado, you need a very high ratio of representation because it just, that's what it is. This alien guy befriends this nurse who then later finds out he is an alien. And then they've got to try and keep this thing out. And then it turns out that the mission he was sent onto was cancelled. Don't destroy the Earth. But he is like, but I have to, it's my mission. Then it just gets zanier and zanier, and it's not screwball comedy, it's more like the X-Files meets the Simon Pegg and Nick Frost movie Paul, but with hints of loads of other shows. It's so wholesome. When I say to you I did not expect it to be that wholesome, it's adapted from a DC Comics property. He's learning how to human. So what's happened is he's used the DNA of the human that he had to kill. So the DNA is rewriting his body and mind, essentially. So he's becoming more human the longer he stays there. And he's trying to understand what makes humans human. Why are they compassionate? Why are they not cold, logical people that destroy the indigenous life form and then harvest the planet for all of its resources, which is exactly what his race were going to do. And it's one of those shows that is a perfect analogy of you've got what we've got, we're going to take it. But it answers the question when they decide, no, actually, we're not going to take it. We're going to protect this place and we're going to protect these people because I'm starting to like them. You've got the classic, you've got the optimistic characters, you've got the Native American influence, which is that lovely positive spiritual element. And you've got this lovely damaged character who is trying to struggle through life and everything goes wrong for them. And then when something's going right, they pull the rug from under it, and it's so wholesome. It's so character driven. It is insane. And the cast is just mad. Just head out and watch it. It's a sci-fi show. Just what they've done with the characters, and it's just worth it for the sheriff alone, because that guy just cracks me up. It's kind of like, yeah, it's like E.T. meets Paul meets the X-Files, and he even references E.T. and calls him a jumped-up potato sex doll. So it's one of those shows, it's very, very difficult to explain, you'd have to kind of give it a go, watch one or two episodes or a few episodes in each season. It's currently in season three. We're like, was it four or five episodes into the season it's airing right now? But we've been meaning to watch it for ages, and we just found it. We're like, oh, we'll give it a go. And then we watched it, and we're like, after like four episodes, we're like, I need more of this. This is fantastic. And again, this alien is trying to cover his tracks, but ultimately makes more tracks and more issues for him to cover up to stop him being found out. And is anyone in? Does anyone listen to these crackpots talking about alternate Earth history and alien interference?
There's been a few podcasts about that, yeah.
Like the ancient aliens and stuff like that. And this show has the balls to call them out, and even has people from Ancient Aliens cameo at conventions. So this alien goes across the country to a convention for abductees. And who is there? That guy with the mad hair from Ancient Aliens playing a parody of himself at this UFO convention. And it's just bonkers. It basically establishes that all these things that these alien theorists have been talking about for the decades now are kind of all true in this show. you have the Anunnaki, you have the Greys, you have the reptilians, and even throws out a joke saying like, oh, the reptilians have been here for thousands of years, you would never see them because they're disguised. And then he just gives his weird laugh, and you just like, wait a minute, did they just, and then it just pans out, and then you've got George Takei turns up voicing a grey alien. Nathan Fillion turns up voicing a sentient octopus. That it's just absolutely bonkers sometimes, but it's just give it a go. It is fun, it is wholesome, and it's a lovely character study of people being people.
I watched the trailer. I just really loved Alan Tudyk's like facial expressions in the show.
Oh, he's fantastically gifted, that guy, like almost vaudevillian kind of physical comedy.
Yeah, just some scenes in the trailer, he just looked pretty clueless, like on the situation that he's in. But he's got, I don't know, he's kind of just pulled off this like expression that I would have thought an alien pretending to be a human would do. So yeah, big kudos to him.
It's just brilliant. It's one of those hidden gems that it's not the most like popular show sci-fi I've ever produced, and it's got quite a big following, but we really only watched it because of the association with Alan Tudyk and like Firefly. And we had no idea what we were going to expect because we don't have satellite TV, so we haven't never seen the trailers, and it's just a really positive show which is mad and zany at heart. It's almost using the, again, like most shows, it's using the alien element as a commentary on humanity. It's the alien looking into humanity and asking, well, why do you do what you do? What is this about? And there was one episode where he looks, he's like, wait, you have sex, you touch each other and you exchange like fluids and stuff like that. And he's like, that's disgusting. And one of the characters says, Well, how do you procreate? Well, like everyone else. We clone and we genetically modify. And it's just like, yeah, that's fair. And it's just using the alien as that filter to make us question, why do we have these things? But then at the same time, when you flip it, the alien's been sent there to exterminate mankind, to harvest the Earth. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword sometimes. But the alien part, yes, it's funny, and Linda Hamilton turns up as an ex-abductee / FBI agent on the case. You've got like Terry O'Quinn turns up as an alien hunter, but I found more dramatic side following these lovely characters through this little show and their ups and downs and stuff, and it's quite nice. And just give it a go. It's fun, and it's perfect for forgetting what's going on in life. Like any show, it's light and it's hearty, and it's not too much of a slog. You don't come away feeling depressed. You come away going with a smile and like, well, yeah, that happened. It's just really worth it. If
you're into the Ted Lasso effect.
Yeah, exactly. If you're into your sci-fis and your comedies and your dramas, and just give it a go. It's great. We've had a lot of fun with it.
It's a bit of a shame it's stuck on sci-fi, to be honest. Like, it needs to be a bit more accessible, I think, to some people.
That's why I mean, certain services exist, Jason.
Well, yes. I was going to say, I assume you accessed it in another capacity, I guess.
Oh, it was all official, then, yeah. We yeah. paid our way.
Then what it was intended to be watched on.
But I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Is it?
Maybe.
Ooh.
Have a look. It might be on Amazon Prime. Oh. I'm pretty sure it was Amazon where we watched the first couple of episodes about 2 or 3 years ago. Or did I? I can't remember, actually, to be fair.
Well, I'm about to put it. I'm putting it in the search bar right now. Resident Aliens. Well, you can buy it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You can buy Series 1 and Series 2 for £12. Not too bad.
The second one, I want to give a quick shout out to. Has anyone been watching For All Mankind? Or know of it?
Well, I know of it. But obviously, I've not watched it because it's stuck on Apple TV. Yeah. Yes.
I'm not going to go on a tangent. I promised I wouldn't. But it basically is taking a leaf out of things like The Man in the High Castle, where what if the Nazis won the war? Whereas this does the sci-fi version and says, well, what if the Soviets won the space race?
Ah, a friend of mine brought this up over curry last week. Yeah, sounds quite interesting. Yeah.
And I'm only 7 episodes in so far. This is a massive kind of what if question done extremely well. And there was a show about 10 years ago with James Franco where he could time travel, in another Stephen King thing where he stopped the assassination of John F. Kennedy. All the consequences happened. Everything changed for the worst, because you don't know what you're going to change until you change it. And then once you've changed it, you've got to run with it. And this show does exactly the same. The Americans are during the space race. The Russians put the first man in orbit. The Russians land on the moon first. You don't see anything from the Russian side other than the news broadcasts and the released videos and stuff from these missions, which is quite nice because it doesn't do the whole drama between state and iron. Yeah, basically the Russians do everything first and they put man on the moon first, and there's this news broadcast where they're watching it and they're saying, breaking news, the USSR lands astronauts on the moon. And all of a sudden NASA are like, oh, we're fucked, we are fucked. Again, it's that lovely alternate history thing where it does ask that question, well, is this what would have happened? So NASA has to fast track all of their stuff. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin don't land on the moon. It's all the history we know is all skewed around. Obviously, most of it is fictionalized accounts, but the way it's done is so clever. Basically, is it Teddy Kennedy or Robert Kennedy is president? We're in the 1970s, about 1974. And he was the senator, Ted Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
He was...
he got not shot as well, didn't he?
And he got shot.
Yeah.
So now the cascade effect is Ted Kennedy is now president.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really weird because Nixon would have been president in the 70s at this point.
That's right, yeah.
And the Soviets have beat the Americans and built a research facility on the moon. Well, not built it. They've sent a pod to research the moon and look for water, ice and stuff like that. And they're spying on the Americans. But the Americans have only just started spying on the Russians, which means the Russians are always 9 steps ahead of the Americas every 8.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a fascinating study in what ifs. It is also, it's been created by, going to throw a name out, co-created by Ronald D. Moore, who everyone knows from the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
And Star Trek.
And Star Trek Next Gen. And I've heard podcasts describe this as what the prequel show Enterprise should have been, which is what they wanted it to be. But the network said, no, we want it on a ship. We want them out there doing this. And you're, oh, for fuck's sake, you could have had something great. You could have had an origin story of a future space race.
Mm-hmm.
And For All Mankind is now past present day. So it's going from the 50s through the 70s, through the 80s and 90s, this show is fabulously done, cleverly done, and it looks gorgeous. And again, like my shows, it's very hard sci-fi. There's like mental breakdowns with astronauts. There's issues with family members. And it's very, very hard alternate sci-fi. And again, I asked that question, what if the Russians got there first? And it's a great exercise in your minds to imagine what the world would be like if the Russians did start the war in the 70s or the 80s and win, or if the Nazis did win the Second World War. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic brain mental exercise, and this show's done it for you, and it's great. I've been watching one episode, half an episode in the mornings, and the rest of it when I get home, and yeah, just give it a shot. It's, if you're into that kind of thing, I still haven't seen The Man in the High Castle, where they do that alternate what if history. Mm. I still need to watch it, and that's been out, what, 10 years or 10 so?
10 years, yeah. I read the books, a P.K. Dick book, I think, and I started reading that, and it's always a bit of a danger when you start reading a book when a series comes out, because you've got a picture in your mind, mm-hmm. and yeah, but it was good. But I started watching that Man in the High Castle when I had sort of like a Kodi thing through the Raspberry Pi. So like, it was like, it's like picking it up on shortwave. It was, you know, trying to watch yeah, it. Yeah. But I might give it a go now that I'm sort of like fully paid up member of Amazon. Mm. I might actually get my money's worth out of it. But it sounds really interesting, that. But what you were explaining there, so look out for that. It's a shame it's on Apple. That's probably just one service too many for me at the moment, Chris.
It's just refreshing to see someone do something different with television. It just looks and sounds stunning. And to see the early days of NASA play out slightly differently is really fascinating. You hear them name dropping these people who should be these bigger people, but they're not there.
They're like sharpening the pencils in the office. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. The accident in the capsule, was it Gus Grissom? What was it? I can't remember what Apollo number it was, isn't it? It blew up during testing. They all died. So that's still established history. So they haven't altered anything like that.
They've kept the disasters in, but not that they've omitted the successes, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, they've just diddled history just a little bit to make it more fun. And it's just really fascinating. Just give it a go and see what you think. That's what I've been trying to watch for the past like 3 weeks.
And listeners, I hope you go and check out what we've been watching. You know, it's our recommendations, I guess. If you do go out there and watch any of these, then let us know and tell us what you thought of them. It'd be great to hear. Carl, dude, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you here, dude.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Jason and Chris. It's been
it's been fun.
Yeah, it's been really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
I would ask to remind the listeners once more where they can find your podcast.
Yeah, I certainly do. So if you go to sunspotstories.podbean.com, that will get you to the landing page of the paid up Podbean bit that I do. But if you bang in Bite High No Limit, it does turn up. It's getting all over the internet. So that's what it's all about. But it was just quickly, it was called Sunspot Stories because that was the original name of the podcast, because it was actually a podcast about my old arcade that was called The Sunspot. But it was only going to be 3 episodes long, and I thought, well, I could launch another channel. Podbean don't let you do that. You've got to pay for it. So I thought, well, no, they're all going on this one, and I'll just have to, you know, if I'm big and famous enough, I'll just have to explain it, and it'll be internet law. So there you go. But thanks again for having us on, you guys. It's been a real privilege. So yeah, it's been great.
Great having you here too, dude. And yeah, and go and follow Carl on Twitter at TeleTechStar. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us. As always, we have really appreciated your company as we've gone through our recommendations. Just a quick one. This episode will probably be the last one for a while. because the day that this episode releases, I shall be jetting off to Japan for a couple of weeks. So hopefully we'll manage to get an episode out by the end of April. And of course, the next Patreon exclusive Pick a Mix episode, we'll also try and get that out by the end of April as well. I think it's just going to be a bit of a struggle trying to get another podcast recorded and edited and uploaded and scheduled for when I'm away. So, that's just the way it's going to be, unfortunately. So, this will be the last one for a while. But, yeah, we will be back at the end of April. Speaking of Patreon, if you'd like to support us monetarily, then Patreon is the place to go. You have two tiers to choose from, and that amazing Patreon exclusive podcast, Pick a Mix, waiting for you too. Don't forget, we have a 7-day free trial available on the £3 tier, so go and check it out. Our Ko-fi page is still active too, so if you just want to give a one-off donation to the show, then that is the place to go. But of course, if that's not right for you right now, you can support us for free by just giving us a rating or review on your podcasting platform of choice. It would be really, really appreciated if you could do that. Please also join us in our Discord server to chat with us or other like-minded people on retro or modern-day pop culture. And also please check out thewolfypod.com, where you can find all of our episodes, articles, and much more. Links to all of these can be found in the show description or on the website. Guys, it's time to say goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. Keep it blocky.
Farewell, and take care of each other. That was cringe. Ugh. I meant it, but oh my God, that landed badly.
Be excellent to one another.
Yeah. Party on, dudes.
Yeah.
But yeah, all that's left for me to say is that my name has been Jason, and you've been listening to Prepare to Fast Forward. We'll see you all back in the past very, very soon. Until then, take care out there. Goodbye.
See you later.